Presbyterians don't have evening worship. So I'm unprepared for an evening sermon. I do have to go home tomorrow. I'm blessed to have a wonderful wife of 61 years. She chose me when she was in the second grade, and I agreed when I was in the fourth grade. And we have been together all those years. Unfortunately, she is not blessed with great health, and she has severe rheumatoid arthritis and needs care. So while I'm gone, we have a friend that spends some time with her, and I know you understand if I need to get back home to my love. I was curious about tomorrow morning, and Jim Muir reminded me when I gave him the title, Authentic Leaders, that this is not a political arena. And I said, I'm not going to talk about politics. I've never talked about politics. I'm going to talk about leadership. And there's an interesting twist to it at the end. That's how I bait you and hope that you'll come and listen. It is an interesting thought today in which we live about leadership, and you look at it historically. I have a little bit of experience with history, having two PhDs in history, one from France and one from the United States. That doesn't mean I'm smart. It just means I've read a lot of history. So I hope you'll come tomorrow morning, and I want to say briefly today for those of you who were here this morning and came back for this evening, I'm grateful that you're here. I wondered when I was asked to come what would be an evening topic that might have some interest. You know, clergy who have been preaching for a number of years have what is called a sermon barrel. That's where they toss old sermons. If they are good preachers, they look at them and wonder why they ever wrote them in the first place. I have a barrel, and I don't look at it. It's pathetic. But I did look at some titles that I used in the past, and I was surprised that I'd never written a sermon on the word touch. The word touch. It's interesting in the New Testament how frequently we find that Jesus is touching people, or some who tried to touch him. I want to describe one of them from Mark's Gospel. And a large crowd followed Jesus and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much from many physicians and spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhages stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and he said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" Jesus looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." I don't know how many times I've been asked the question by people. In fact, I was asked that question twice this morning after the service. Where do you get your ideas for sermons, you preachers? The question comes more frequently to pastors and preachers than you might imagine. This one came from a lady in the first church I served in Philadelphia. She was in her 90s. She came to church every Sunday morning. I was 24. she would take my hand after the worship, and she would put her hand in mine and her other hand over mine, and shriveled and looked up at me, and she said, "You know, Pastor, yours is the only hand I will touch all week. Thank you for letting me hold your hand for a minute." That's a long time ago. And I can see her face even at this very moment. And I cannot tell you over the years in churches that I've served that that has repeated itself again and again and again. So the idea of touching has been marinating in my mind since I had to give the title to this back in January. Yours is the only hand I will touch all week. Thank you. And then I went in search of some biblical evidence of this, and almost all of us know that people inside the church and outside the church know that Jesus had miracle hands, didn't he? An incredible amount of curing people with all kinds of incurable diseases. And everywhere he went, huge crowds followed him, and everywhere he went in his popular ministry, his reputation preceded himself, so that as he moved from one city to the next, people gravitated to him, some out of curiosity, no doubt. I once thought of this as maybe they were people trying to invest in some kind of a divine lottery. Maybe they would be the lucky one to win the spiritual prize of getting what they wanted from him. And then I began to think about the fact that every crowd, may I be so bold as to suggest that maybe even in this crowd there are those of us, I include myself, who suffer, and sometimes no one even knows it. Everywhere Jesus went, he was confronted by people who wanted to touch him, and often he touched them first, like the blind little boy, or the epileptic child, or the 10 lepers, or the mentally challenged man who lived in the cemetery, or those with incurable diseases who didn't want to get near him because they were declared unclean. Have you ever thought about the fact, just a simple theological question to you, have you ever thought about the fact that Jesus did so selective one-on-one healing? Have you ever thought about the question, why didn't he simply cure everybody? Everybody, including us. Well, I'm convinced it wasn't because he had limited power. I'm convinced that if he had desired to do that, he could have raised his hand and simply said, "In the name of God, all of you be healed, every single one of you, period. No questions asked." But he didn't do that. Have you ever wondered why? Why didn't he do that? He could have, surely. Well, I wrestled with this a little bit because I want to be theologically sound in what I say to you. I came up with this answer, that the reason he didn't do that is because that's simply not the reason God sent him to live among us. Rather, God sent him to live among us to put us in touch with God, to remind us that apart from God, you will have great difficulty in finding a deep meaning and purpose to life. And above all, he came to open the door, if you will, to the kingdom of heaven, eternal life. But why didn't he cure everyone? Well, then this nameless woman is in the crowd. We don't know much about her. We know that she suffered hemorrhages for 12 years. We know that she tried almost everything to get a cure. It says she went to one doctor after another, after another, after another, and spent her life savings. Did you notice in Luke's gospel who was the doctor? He omitted that section about going to one doctor after another. I wonder why. But instead of getting better, she grew worse. It's clear that she had tried everything, if you will, except one. Except one. And she hears of the popularity of Jesus, and he's coming into her village. He was on a preaching mission in the Tour of Galilee. And wherever he went, there were great crowds pushing and shoving around him, just as there are crowds today to get close to the celebrities, pushing and shoving, wanting to see his face, touch his hand. You know, it always annoys me. I'm a golfer. I'm probably the world's worst golfer, but I'm better than the colleagues I play with, so I feel good about that. But, you know, you watch golf on these channels, and these pros go down through the crowds, and they stick out their hands to touch them. What is it in us that makes us want to touch the celebrity? She dares not to try to get him to look at her. In fact, if you'll let me use the word, she sneaks up behind him and reaches and touches only his garments. Mark uses the word immediately more than any other word used in the New Testament. No other gospel writer uses the word immediately except Mark. She purposely avoids wanting to look at him in the face or to speak to him. She didn't want him to do anything, but if possible, she had a blend of a flicker of faith with a whole big dose of superstition. She only wanted to touch his garments, and if it worked, wonderful. If it didn't, so be it. But it worked. Mark uses the word. Immediately she feels these in her body that she's healed of the disease. But the story doesn't end there. Never ends there, does it? Not with Jesus. Jesus stops in his tracks. He turns around. He looks at the crowd. He asks what we would even say today is a ridiculous question. Crowds pushing and shoving. Who touched me? He asks. Ridiculous, because everyone was pushing and shoving. Even his disciples said to him, "Are you serious, Jesus? Look at this crowd. Everybody's pushing and shoving." But he persisted, "Who touched me?" He sensed in his own being that power had been released to someone in the crowd. He wanted to know who it was. And I picture him asking again, "Who is it that touched me?" It's at that moment that she falls down before Jesus, admits to him that she is the one who touched him. He doesn't condemn her. He welcomes her into a full dimension of life. And it is reported that the woman, knowing what had been done to her, was a woman who was nobody. She became somebody. "Somebody touched me," he said. And she represents everybody. This nobody who became somebody represents everybody, and she becomes a portrait of you and of me, like it or not. The truth is, we're all like her. We want as much as possible we can get from God. We don't want to see him face to face. We just want the benefits of God. Now, to be sure, I've spent more time than I should have talking about this nameless woman. But I've done so because I think there's something in her that I feel represented in me, and I hope in you. She represents so much of what we think about life. We want the benefits of God, but we don't want all of the obligations or responsibilities. I go back to my 92 or 3-year-old woman in Berwyn, Pennsylvania. "Yours is the only hand I will touch all week. Thank you." You know what that is? It's loneliness at its depth. It's an ancient Jewish rabbinical proverb which says, "If you're not close enough to know what causes me pain, then you're not close enough to love me." If we were all honest, we would say that we are much like that unnamed woman, daring to reach out to touch this hand of Jesus to get the benefits, but not the responsibilities. I've grown convinced in my ministry that I have the greatest fear of what is happening with a religion in the world. A religion without compassion is a fraud. It's a fraud. You cannot love God and refuse to love other people or to care for them. And by the way, once you've been touched by Jesus, you cannot stop touching other people. I mentioned this morning that in retirement you have a little more time to read things that you have put off all of your life, and I'm a fan of biographies, and I've just finished a biography of Ashley Montague. Perhaps you've heard of him, perhaps not. He was a brilliant anthropologist. He was born in 1905 and he died in 1999. I discovered it back in January when I was looking up the word touch in Wikipedia. And Ashley Montague wrote a book with just the one word title, touching. I bought the book. It's magnificent. He claims that we all need to be touched by others. It starts out in a mother's womb. You will know that, my dear. You will know that. It's a need that does not ever go away from us all through life. Montague claims, unfortunately, that at birth we are trained otherwise. Often parents surround us with toys so that we learn how to focus our eyes on things, not relationships. And then in later life we end up treating people like things. Early in life, we're weaned away from touching. We live in a generation and a time when we are afraid to touch. I was on an airplane yesterday, a long time on an airplane, in fact. One plane I sat on for 5.5 hours. It's illegal, but they didn't get us off board anyway. And there was an elderly woman seated next to me, and she said, "I'm scared. I'm scared we're going to crash. Can I hold your hand?" And I thought to myself, we've never even met each other. This is a stranger. What did it tell me? It told me that everyone wants to be touched. And it took me back to reading the Gospels again, the miracles. Jesus touched the blind. He touched the mentally impaired. He touched the lepers. He touched those with all sorts of diseases. He touched a little girl who had died, and he raised her to new life. He touched a man who'd been paralyzed for 38 years. He touched a little boy who suffered seizures and fell to the ground and foamed at the mouth. Everyone he touched, he healed in body, mind, and spirit. And then Montague says, we don't touch people, especially older people, and I'm one of them, but they're the most isolated segment of our population and the most lonely. Then he tells, near the end of the book, a wonderful little vignette story of an invalid woman that he visits frequently, an older woman. She's bedfast, and on his last visit to her, he stands beside her, takes her hand, and then gives her a hug. And on that occasion, tears came to her eyes and said, "I'm probably going to die tonight, but yours is the hand that I will remember, who touched me before I died." And she did. All of my ministry, I've had people greet me at the door who have said the same thing: yours is the only hand I will touch all week. I read a wonderful book a number of years ago which says, get to the point. You know what it says in the book? He talks about people lecturing. He talks about sermons. And he said, "For you preachers, I remind you that 98% of what you say in the 20 minutes that you speak will be forgotten within 20 minutes. 1% may linger on for the rest of the day. 1% they may remember a little longer. So get to the point." So I was thinking this afternoon as I was going over these notes, maybe I should just give you the point and sit down and you could remember it. Get to the point, huh? So I get to the point this way. How many of you have read what is called a children's book called The Velveteen Rabbit? Ah, the hands go up. You know, it wasn't written for you. It's a children's book. You know that. It has such a profound truth for all ages, and I love telling the story. And please, if you've read it, hear it again with joy. The Velveteen Rabbit is a Christmas toy. And on Christmas morning, a little boy receives the toy, and he plays with the rabbit for a minute or two, and then he pushes it aside to open other gifts and other toys, and he never goes back to the rabbit. And the rabbit lives in a toy chest in a nursery, and no one ever pays any attention to him. he becomes shy and snubbed and embarrassed by all of the other expensive toys. The rabbit then finally one day met a friend called the skin horse. The skin horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath, and most of the hairs of his tail had been pulled off. But he was wise, for he had seen a succession of mechanical toys arrive and boast and brag and break their mainsprings and pass away because they never became real. At that point, the rabbit asked, "What is real? Does it mean having things inside of you that buzz?" "Real isn't how you're made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you when a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always honest. "But when you're real, you don't mind being hurt a little by those who love you," the rabbit asked quickly. "Does it happen all at once? Or is it bit by bit?" Quietly, the skin horse looks at the rabbit and says, "It doesn't happen all at once. You become, it takes a long, long time. And that's why it doesn't happen to people who break easily or have sharp edges or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off. Your eyes have dropped out. You get loose in the joints, and you're very shabby looking. But these things don't really matter at all, because once you're real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." "I suppose you're real," the rabbit asked the skin horse, and then he wished he had not said it, because he thought the skin horse might be sensitive because he had no hair. But the skin horse only smiled and said, "Yes, I'm real. Over the years, I have been loved and loved, held and held, touched and touched until I became real. And once you are real, you can't become unreal. It lasts forever." It's not a children's story. It's for all of us. And I believe those of us who, along the way in our journey of life, have felt the touch of the hand of God, we will then be unable to refuse to reach out with the same touch to others. I'm aware, more than you'll ever know, of how hesitant we are of expressing our touch to other people. We don't want to invade their privacy, quote. But at the same time, I know that you know someone at this very moment who would welcome your touch because it validates them as a person. Remember, if you're not close enough to know what causes another person's pain, you'll never be close enough to love them. So if you pray tonight, or if you don't normally pray at night, then I ask you to do so tonight. Just before you close your eyes, say a little prayer. A little prayer to thank God that you're real. Because over the years, you have been loved and loved, held and held, touched and touched, until you have become real. And once you're real, you cannot become unreal again. It lasts forever. Find someone to touch this week. It's your gift to them. Because in your hands, so as in the hands of Jesus, is the touch of healing. May God help us all to do that. Would you join me in prayer? Oh God, for the gift of all of the senses you have created within each one of us, we give you great thanks for the gift of touch. It reminds us of the feeling that brings us the good news that you love us even when we are unlovable. And because you have loved us, you want us to love each other. And now let us go to our respective places for rest. And may the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the presence of God's Spirit be with you and all those whom you know and love forever and ever. Amen.